Hello, what's your point? I was watching 60 Minutes last night, and oddly enough, that show 60 Minutes, it's an hour long. Who knew? Anyway, so I'm watching it, and they're doing a piece on Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. These are two space little capsule modules that we launched into space in the 70s or 80s or something, or I don't know. And the mission of these two little capsules is to find intelligent life somewhere and that might be able to respond to us. And these two little things, Voyager 1, Voyager 2, they actually went through the solar system already. Now they're on their way to Alpha Centauri, which is the next galaxy. And the mission, again, is to find intelligent life. And I'm saying to myself, have you looked here on this planet? How about trying to find some intelligent life here? That would be nice.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I don't think there is any intelligent life here.
Whatever.
Pretty sure there's not. I don't know what time of day you're listening to this, so good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. You are my guest at this point. I don't think I'm ever... Forget it. Just forget it. You just sit down, be quiet, and I will talk for about half an hour, and when it's all over, you can get up and leave. How about that? How about that deal? I don't serve any cocktails, no finger sandwiches, nothing like that. Get it yourself. Go to the bathroom at any point during this show. I swear you won't miss much. And that's the beauty of this. Is there intelligent life on other planets?
How do I know? Why are you asking me these things?
I'm still trying to seek it here. I don't think there is any. Sure, there's little spatterings of what seems to be intelligent life, but then when you talk to people a little bit more, you realize, no, they're not that intelligent. There are very few people that possess full intelligence. Sure, there's very, very smart people, part of the Mensa deal, where Their IQ is through the roof. They know everything. They can use their mind like a calculator. They retain information. They're brilliant. They're just absolutely brilliant, like Albert Einstein and Bucky LaRue. I don't know who Bucky LaRue is. I made that name up. I'm sure there's somebody else besides Albert Einstein that had some brains. Sherlock Holmes, absolutely amazing, but a fictional character. That's the problem. But these people, if you talk to these, Carl Sagan, if you talk to these incredibly intelligent people about their personal lives, you'll find out they're schmucks. They have no concept. They're extremely intelligent in the brain, but socially and common sense-wise, not much there at all. Not much there at all. So there's the book smarts, which I've met people like that. And again, you delve a little bit deeper, And then there's the street smarts. I'm a little more impressed by the street smarts. They've been through life already at the age of 3. They know the streets. They don't know much about history, don't know much biography, but I do know that I love you. I believe that's a song.
I don't know. These street smart people, I can't even say it. That's how smart I am. They're not intelligent at all as far as book learning is concerned, but they know everything else. They're quick on their feet. They're just like really, 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 really in tune with everything. But they're not smart. They're not book smart. They know nothing. They don't know how to spell. They can't form a sentence on paper. So is there intelligent life on Earth? Not completely, no. No, there isn't. What about the animals? Animals, seriously, you call that intelligent? That's instinctive. What do animals do? They wake up in the morning, they search for food, they kill other animals, they eat the animals, they leave the carcass, they don't even put it in a trash can, and then they go back to bed. And then every once in a while, they'll screw another animal of the same species and protect it, go out, kill some more other animals, leave the carcass rotting on the ground, and bring the food back to the babies, and then they die. That's not intelligence. That's not intelligence. That's survival. And that's my point on today's show. For today's sermon, the human being does nothing but survive. It's true. Sure, we have TV and we have video games and stuff. Ron, that's more than survival. No, that's going backwards. That's dumbifying is what that is. No, I don't know about intelligent life. I really don't. And I've said this before. If we had alien beings from other galaxies and things visit our planet, they would obviously land somewhere in middle America in a trailer park. That's where the UFOs always land, near a trailer park. I guess there's more of a landing field involved. And they talk to people that really can't form sentences and really don't have a lot of teeth in their mouth. This is not representative of us. Why can't these alien spacecrafts land somewhere in a populated urban area, like right outside of a Starbucks? They'd be somewhat more impressed. Not a lot, but somewhat more impressed in the fact that they have all their teeth and they actually go to dentists and they get their teeth cleaned. This is a rise in civilization. This is why you don't see a lot of UFOs and alien beings landing on Earth, is because they kind of skip over it, saying, ugh, I don't want to land there. We could get our spacecraft dirty. Ugh, ooh, ooh. Do you remember the movie E.T.? That was the initials of a space creature, extraterrestrial. E.T. Didn't look like you and I, but was extremely cute. It was a cute thing. There were little E.T. puppets and E.T. characters that the kids could buy, and they were actually they were adorable. Aww. Yeah, they were. They were. These little things were adorable. So when we think of space aliens, I think of these adorable little creatures. So anyway, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 are hurtling themselves through space as we speak. And on Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, there are records of our culture, literal phonograph records. And if the aliens played the phonograph records, they would hear Chuck Berry, Louis Armstrong, as representative of our music tastes here on this planet. Thank God we didn't send them rap. They might just explode this planet out of anger. And there are examples of our civilization on the spacecraft, so that if these things are ever intercepted by alien beings or something like that, they would know what Earth is like and what we do here and that kind of thing, and the fact that there are Walmarts here. I think that sums up our entire planet right now. Tell me about Earth. Well, everybody on them has cell phones. No matter how much money they have, they all have a cell phone. And there are a lot of Walmarts and Starbucks, and the major pharmacy is CVS. I think that's about it. As a civilization, we suck. We kill each other out of anger and delusionment, and we profile people, and we totally destroy our planet every chance we get. We destroy it. This beautiful planet. We chop down the trees, and we pollute the air, and throw garbage out the window. This is what we do. See. And there's religion, but most of the wars are based over religion and cultural religious groups. So that apparently doesn't work out too well either. So in general, the planet is a big turd in the pants is what the planet is. I guess back in the 80s or 70s, when I think it was maybe 60s or 70s, when Carl Sagan was around, they have these phonograph records so that the aliens, when they intercept the spacecraft, they just play the phonograph records. And it's really funny because it's so indicative of where we are at the time technologically. We think we're advanced. We thought back in the 60s that phonograph records were the most incredible mode of listening to music and the spoken voice. We thought that's technology, man. That's technology. Now we don't have phonograph records, and I'm just thinking, if these alien beings ever intercept the spacecraft and they look at the phonograph records, they're going to go, what the hell is this thing? Apparently Carl Sagan wrote instructions with the phonograph record that if aliens ever intercept this spacecraft, this is what, and he also included a phonograph needle and a phonograph to play it on. It's kind of funny, really, when you think about it. It's extremely funny if you really think about it. I don't know. If I were an alien being, and believe me, sometimes I think I am, and I intercepted a spacecraft from another universe, another galaxy, and it was a phonograph record, I would say to myself, oh, how backwards can a civilization be? Phonograph record? Why, we're not even talking. We just communicate by thinking. What? Phonograph records? Don't bother with that planet. How backward can you be? Anyway, thanks for listening. You really are very special. You're not one of the people I'm talking about. You are actually intelligent. Yeah, you didn't buy that much, did you? No, I knew you wouldn't. Well, we do this every single weekday, unless it's a grandiose holiday that involves some type of religious aspect, like Christmas. I don't do it on Christmas. Not that I'm that religious, but it's an excuse not to do it. You can find us on the Podbean Network. As a matter of fact, they house all of our episodes. I believe there's about 1,200 of them at this point. You can listen to all of them if you so care to do so. You can, like, binge your ass off. That's all on the Podbean Network. Podbean, they keep all of that stuff. And NewEnglandBroadcasting.com and iTunes, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube. We're just on a daily basis all over the place. Let me introduce some of the people that make this show so special. Oh, there aren't any. There's John Shanahan. He does the opening announcement, the comedy commercials, many of what we call the radio bumps. He's a talented and creative writer, theater director. He's really something. John Shanahan. Google him. You'll find him. And then there's Jason Shaw, who composes the opening theme and all the incidental music that you hear, including the music in the background. This is a Jason Shaw original for this program. Thank you, Jason. A very talented man as well. Nicole Reed is that lovely British voice that you hear here and there during this program. Julie does some of the introductions as well. And we have many people that work all over the country, actually, setting up interviews for us to do on this program. So, all in all, and then I'm here too. It's very, very exciting. It's about as exciting as it gets.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Don't worry, no one has to know. This is just between you and me and Ron. We cool? Get comfortable, everybody. It's time for one of Ron's funny stories.
I yesterday did something that I do almost every day of my life. I go to the supermarket. For me, the supermarket is just like Disney World. It's got all the characters, and it's got that fun feeling for an adult. Do you realize that in a grocery store, in a supermarket, there are aisles of food? Can you imagine that? Talk about civilization. That's one of the perks. You can walk into a huge, gigantic building and housed within with freezers and coolers and all kinds of stuff, aisles as far as the eye can see of meats and poultry and dairy and dry goods and drinks and prepared foods and frozen foods and ice cream and deli meats filled with wonderful nitrates, hot dogs, baked beans, condiments further than the eye can see, cheeses. No, I didn't say Jesus. I said cheeses. Different. One binds you up. The other apparently sets you free. Coffee. Donuts. Fruits, fresh vegetables. Why, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. It is Disney World. We all eat. Why not go to the ultimate eating emporium, the supermarket? But it's not that easy to deal with. Because before you walk into the supermarket, you have to park your car. And that is something that I remark at. Now, when I see a parking space in front of a supermarket, first of all, we all roam the parking lot to get our cars as close to the supermarket front entrance as possible. Because the groceries are so heavy. We don't carry groceries. Give me a break. You put them in a cart and you wheel them. What's your big deal? My mother once said to me, this is the only thing she ever said to me, by the way. She said, Ron, park as far away from the front door of a store as possible. I said, why, Mom? Because there's more spaces, because no one else does that? She says, no. She says, because it's probably the only exercise you're going to ever get, you fat ass. She didn't say you fat ass. That is something that I imagine she was thinking. But she was right. The only exercise I really ever do get is walking from the car to a store. So why not put that car far away from the store, get any parking space you want, because no one else parks that far away, and get some exercise and walk to the store, and then walk back to the car. That's your exercise, Ron. And I thought, you know, she's right. She was wrong about a lot of things. She was right about that. However, it's part of my instinct as a human being, flesh and bone, total stupidity, I still park as close to the door as possible, the front door. Because we humans always look for the convenient and easy way out. It's how we live. It's who we are. It's our society. It's why we have technology. Make life as easy and simple as possible. Not simple necessarily in the sense of simplicity, but easy in the sense that you don't have to lift a finger to do anything. That's we're made of that. That's why technology exists. That's why we invented the automobile. It's why we invented everything, to make things easy for us so we don't have to do a damn thing or move a muscle. So in finding a space, I see a space in the parking lot and I pull into it. I shut off the car. I go in. I buy my groceries. I get in the car. I back out of the space and I go home. Sounds easy, right? Well, for many Americans, it's not. Many people drive around a parking lot, they see a space, they don't pull into it. They back into it. Like there's some type of tractor trailer driver that has to back the truck in so they can unload the truck on the dock. This isn't a docking situation. You pull into the damn space. But some people think that they are driving experts and they back into the space. Many times it takes them about 5 or 6 tries to get their car in properly into the space. And I look at these people backing in and I'm saying to myself, what the hell's wrong with you? Now, I used to do this. I used to back into every space so that when I came out of the store, leaving would be very easy and very simple, and I wouldn't have to bother. And then something clicked in my head. I think it was the fact that I was watching other people back into spaces, and I said to myself, I'm as much of a douchebag as they are. Why am I doing this? Why spend so much time backing into a space when it's no big deal just to pull into it and then pull out of it? Pulling out of a space, backing out of a space when you're leaving is like simple as pie. Backing into a space when you're parking isn't that easy. Do you ever sit in a car next to a vacant space and another car comes along and they try to back into the space with you sitting right next to them? I cover my eyes. Oh my God, don't hit my car, don't hit my car, don't hit my car. Oh no, they came so close, don't hit my car, don't hit my car. It's agonizing. Then I wonder, why are you really backing into a space? Are you going to rob the store? Are you going to walk into the supermarket and say, give me all your canned goods? And then run out of the store with your Uzi or your gun? Load all the canned goods into your car, get into your car, and make a fast getaway because you're pointed out of the space. Is it because you're going to rob something? What is your hurry leaving? All right, I got the goods. I paid at the cash register. All right, quick, let's get out of here before they catch us. What is your point? What are you doing? What do you stop it? Just stop and think about what you're doing, and you will know that this is absolutely absurd. So, I continue to watch life pass in front of my eyes, and I laugh and I guffaw at most of it.
That was a really funny story, Ron. But then again, I'm in the third grade.
Yeah. that was a little demeaning.
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender. But I hung up my boxing gloves recently and put on my chef's hat to open my brand new restaurant.
It's Headshots, Bobby.
Headshots. Headshots serve some of the best Italian crayons.
That's cuisine.
Italian cuisine in the area. You come in and I'll give you a meal that'll knock you out. Ah, crayons.
That one says meatballs, Bobby.
Meatballs are the best you've ever tasted. Come in for my 1-2 punch pasta and daily lunch specials. Every day, daily lunch specials are every day.
We're all good on that one, Bobby. Let's keep going.
All right. So listen, come into...
It's called Headshots, Bobby. Headshots.
Headshots, thank you. Headshots, and ask for me. What the hell is my name?
Headshots is located downtown at the corner of Flange and Hassenpfeffer. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner if Bobby remembers the keys and where the restaurant is.
Hi. Very well, thank you. And you?
I'm very good. Andrew Rowan is president of the Wildlife Land Trust Board of Directors and Chief Scientific Officer for the Humane Society of the United States. And thanks for being with us here. We're talking about a subject that is so near and dear to my heart that I actually get angered when people don't understand what I'm talking about. But let's talk about the Wildlife Land Trust. For those that may not be familiar, what exactly is that entity?
Well, it's a land protection entity. We basically either take control of land, we get fee title, or we establish and manage an easement on the land that, in our case, protects the land for wildlife and especially from hunting and trapping.
Okay.
So we're one of the few land trusts in the country that will provide that protection. It's a challenge. One of the reasons why other land trusts don't do it is because it is a challenge. And so we have to develop, we're developing approaches and technologies that help us monitor the land so that we can guarantee that it will remain free of hunting and trapping, but also be a what we call a shelter without walls for all the wildlife that live on it.
Now, in many cases, your organization is sought out to do that. In other cases, do you go to acquire certain lands in certain areas in order to actually take them over?
We will do that. We have a generous donation of a large parcel of land in southern Oregon, up in the mountains in southern Oregon, and we have expanded that property and tried to build connectivity with other lands around it by purchasing some of the land. So, purchasing of land is expensive, and so we don't do it very often, and we need to raise the funds to so that we can do more of it.
Right.
But it's something that is certainly part of the toolbox that we use to try and protect land and protect the connectivity of land. Mm-hmm. That's a key issue, especially for the larger animals.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have large spaces, and those spaces need to be connected so they can get back and forth.
How is it enforced? In other words, if someone is trespassing or hunting or trapping on trust land, then that would be that's an arrestable offense. How is that handled?
Well, I mean, we try to develop good relationships with the neighbors and let them understand. And they tend to, even the people who do the hunting and trapping on their own lands will respect what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And so, by and large, we haven't had a lot of problems there. We've been working with fish and wildlife agencies in the states. We're helping some of them out with a decoy, which is a model of an animal with a camera in it. And some of those decoys have, in fact, led to arrests of poachers. And it's a way for us to maintain a positive relationship with the local law enforcement, wildlife law enforcement people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and then of course with new technologies, with solar powered cameras and with drone technologies. We're exploring what we might be able to do with those.
Yeah, wow. So it gets pretty complicated. Well, what you're doing is wonderful, certainly. I'm, you know, besides that, I'm also concerned about overdevelopments. I see so many in neighborhoods and suburbs, in wide open areas, I see a lot of trees and forests being destroyed in order to clear out hundreds and hundreds of acres to put up homes, developments, industrial parks. To me, that's a concern as well.
Yes, it is. And I mean, that's part of what we, you know, one of our sort of little catchphrases is that we lose 6,000 acres of of land, of habitat every day. And so in terms of the larger United States, that's a relatively small amount, but nonetheless, it adds up. And over time, what you find is that you've suddenly lost all of that wild land that you remembered as a boy that you used to roam around
exactly.
on. I know certainly, you know, I grew up in Cape Town, and I used to run around all over the mountains in Cape Town, and there's an awful lot of development that's happened in the places that I used to go, and most of them are no longer the places I used to go.
Yeah, I understand why we don't redevelop what we already have as opposed to building new things and letting the stuff we have just fall apart, but that's a whole other subject, I suppose. Something of this multitude and magnitude needs public support, quite obviously.
Yes. And I mean, if people are interested either in, you know, having us protect their land or in providing funding for this, then the best way is to go to wildlifelandtrust.org, our website, and that will give you an entree into the into what we can do for you.
Good talking to you, and always worth talking about. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks very much, Ron. Have a good day.
Thanks, Andrew. Bye-bye. Now that's intelligent life. Well, sir, my job is done for today. I have created enough of a mess. You go out and do that. You go out and create a mess, will you? Huh? It's part of your job. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace.